My first episode of an arrhythmia woke me up when I was asleep at home, and I felt very unwell, dizzy, and my heart was going at about 200 beats per minute, and I really felt unwell. I waited a few minutes to see if it settled, and I realized what I had, and so my wife called an ambulance, and they took me to hospital. And I saw the ECG, and this was the first thing that worried me, because I thought that I had a particular sort of arrhythmia, being a doctor, which was atrial flutter. And the doctors said I had a supraventricular tachycardia. You treat them in completely different ways. So I felt that they were giving me the wrong treatment. So that wasn't a brilliant start, but after about 2 hours, I went back into normal heart rate, and they observed me overnight and sent me home the next day, and I actually went to work the next day because I was feeling fine. And that's often the way in which atrial fibrillation, as it turns out, presents. On a positive note, they arranged for me to see a cardiologist, and I saw a cardiologist who didn't look at my ECG properly, so I was not impressed with him. He did put me onto some medication that I didn't think was the right one for me, so I did some investigations. Again, as a doctor, I'm in a position to be able to do this. I think if you're a lay person, this might be a bit more difficult, but maybe your GP will do this for you. And I asked to see a different doctor for a second opinion, and this doctor actually read my ECG properly and told me what I'd already knew, which was that I had atrial flutter followed by atrial fibrillation. So initially I would have episodes of atrial arrhythmia, perhaps about 5 or 10 minutes once every couple of weeks, and then over the 5 years it ended up with me being in arrhythmia about half the time. My atrial fibrillation often comes on in the middle of the night for no good reason. It always is sensitive to red wine, so I've cut out red wine. That's very common because red wine contains amphetamine-type drugs, tyramine and things like that, that make the heartbeat faster and can precipitate arrhythmias. People need to work out for themselves what causes or what might bring on their arrhythmia. And initially I found that I could put myself back into normal heart rhythm by lying on my left side, but if I laid on my right side, I was more likely to get an arrhythmia. So it's a sort of trial and error. You find out what your own personal arrhythmia does. And how did it bother me? Well, the main thing was I didn't like it, because I don't like feeling my heart beating, which is pretty common. And the other major thing for me was that my exercise tolerance went down. So when I was having flutter, I felt really unwell because my heart was beating really fast. And with fibrillation, it was beating less fast, but it was still affecting me. So if I exercised, I just had to take it a bit more slowly. So what happened to me was that I was given drug treatments, commonly one that stabilizes the nerves so that you're less likely to get aberrant arrhythmia. These are called antiarrhythmic drugs. Commonest one that's used for atrial fibrillation is one called flecainide. This is an interesting drug because it's very easy to get toxic from it, and it also increases a person's risk of sudden death. That means just dropping down dead. So the mortality with the drug is actually not that different from not treating. And then there are a whole bunch of other things. So I was tried on that and it didn't work. I then, because I was still getting regular episodes of atrial flutter, you don't want to leave someone in atrial flutter because you run the risk of actually permanently damaging the heart muscle. And as I said, it's not very nice. I had what was called a flutter ablation quite early on, which I was awake for. And essentially that involves putting cannula into your heart through your groin. And the first one I had was, I was awake, so I was able to watch it all. It was really painful, despite having morphine. Once they got to the heart, putting it into the groin wasn't a big deal, but once it got up into the heart, it was really... And the process was actually damaging heart muscles, so it's a bit like having a heart attack, except for it's induced by the doctors, so it's not surprising it hurts. So, and I had a flutter ablation, which essentially didn't get rid of my episodes of flutter 100%, but got rid of them 90%, which was good. But I was still getting intermittent episodes of atrial fibrillation. And the hope was that by getting rid of the flutter, they'd get rid of the fibrillation as well, but they didn't. And so I was tried on a range of other drugs, because even when I was having atrial fibrillation, my heart was going pretty fast. I was put on to drugs called beta blockers, which slow the heart down. Then I was on a different antiarrhythmic drug because flecainide didn't really work that brilliantly for me, propafenone, which was three times a day, which is a pain in the drug. Taking a drug more than once a day is really not very nice. That, I don't think that did anything. So I was on all of these things, and it still didn't slow my heart rate down. I then spent a number of years taking increasing doses of various drugs to prevent me from having a stroke, because I am young and healthy and at low risk of a stroke. I was initially on aspirin, but I decided that I needed to go on to warfarin about 2.5 years ago. It's a much better drug for preventing stroke, and as you get older, your risk goes up. So I switched over to that. A bunch of arrhythmia drugs didn't really work. The beta blockers did slow my heart down a little bit, and actually I quite like being on them. They make me feel quite good. They're used for stress and anxiety, that's one, and migraines and stuff like that. And as I was getting more and more episodes of atrial fibrillation, I finally decided, after much deliberation, to have a fibrillation ablation. The procedure lasted 3.5 hours, so it's not an insignificant procedure. And it seems to have helped, although I wasn't that keen on having ablation for a number of reasons. One is it can go wrong, it has a mortality. The death rate relates to actually when you have a fibrillation ablation, what they do is they burn all the nerves between the atrial node, which is in the pulmonary vein, and the heart. So they have to do a big burn around the entire pulmonary vein, or the base of the pulmonary vein, which is a big procedure. And if they do it too much, you get a fistula. That's a connection between the vessel, the pulmonary vein, just above the heart, and the gullet. And that's basically curtains. You die from that. You can also, if they do a little bit too much, you can bleed into the lining around the heart, so you get a what's called a tamponade, which is blood in the lining around the heart. And it's a bit like having a double balloon. If you fill up the space between two balloons, then the inner balloon gets smaller, and basically it's like squeezing the heart, and then it doesn't work. So that's pretty nasty as well. And you can get infections, and finally, the operation cannot work. So the final point is that ablations haven't been around for very long, so we don't know long-term whether they actually work or not. We know, in terms of working, that they do have a good effect short-term, and by that I mean a few years, of stopping people having regular episodes of fibrillation. So I had the procedure done 7 weeks ago, and since then I've had 2 episodes of arrhythmias, which is not bad going. No, 3 episodes. One of them was immediately after the procedure, and that's another potential side effect of the procedure, because you basically burn nerves and heart tissue, heart muscle, and that in itself is very irritating to the heart, so you can precipitate other arrhythmias by doing that. And I precipitated fast ventricular flutter going at about 200 beats per minute. And I waited 2 days and didn't get better. And that's when they had me in to do a cardioversion. Basically, you can do in, they put me to sleep very briefly, put some paddles on me, but they're sticky, not like they you see in telly, and gave me an electric shock. I was asleep, so fortunately, and it worked first time, and it was very good. The cardiologist told me that I need to view the ablation as a two-stage procedure. So normally it's done, can be done twice. You have to wait at least 3 months after the first one to see whether it's worked or not, because up until then you can still get arrhythmias because the heart's tissue's healing. And depending on who you believe, it's between 70 and 90% effective at getting rid of the arrhythmia. What we don't know, what nobody knows, is whether you can stop all your medication. So is the long-term risk of stroke reduced by having an ablation? And the truth is, nobody knows because we haven't been doing... The logical thing would be if you get rid of the arrhythmia, you get rid of the risk of stroke. So what I'm hoping is that there will be a sequential reduction in the number of pills that I take. I've had a range of other problems in the past. So I had a pituitary tumour that got excised, and the fibrillation really started after that. And the pituitary tumour it produced a hormone that made the heart bigger. And I think the two things were related, personally, although, again, there's no evidence for that. So in terms of how I feel about myself, I don't feel sick. I feel completely normal. I have a condition. And this is true for a lot of long-term conditions. It's how you internalize it and think about it yourself. So actually being positive about what you've got and seeing that it can be a good thing rather than a bad thing, I think is quite important. I know that my particular fibrillation, if untreated with ablation, would have gone permanent. And then I would have had the deal of, do I just live with the symptoms or not? Which I probably would have done. And because the course of atrial fibrillation is not 100% clear, you can't predict that in 5 years' time it will be doing this or that. It's quite difficult.